To Fight Alongside Friends, The First World War Diaries of Charlie May, edited by Jerry Harrison, read by Finlay Robertson. Forward. What is it that makes one diary live and another simply die on the page? 9 times out of 10, it is down to the intrinsic interest of the material or the quality of the writing. But every so often, one comes across a diary where it is the sense of personality behind it that lifts it out of the ordinary. Such a diary is that of Captain Charlie May, killed in the early morning of the 1st of July 1916, leading his men of B Company of the 22nd Manchester Service Battalion into action on the first day of the Battle of the Somme. There is nothing very remarkable about Charles May, and that is the point about him. From the first page of his diary to the last haunting entries, he feels so utterly familiar and recognisable. That is partly because his war was the war that a million men like him knew and endured and has become part of our historic consciousness. But more than that, it is because Charlie May is England, as England has always liked to imagine itself. The England that stood in square at Waterloo and would stand waist-deep in water at Dunkirk. The England of 100 1940s and 50s films, down to his English wife and his English baby daughter, and the English Batman and the Alexandra Rose that he sports into battle. The unassuming, modest, enduring, reliable, immensely likeable kind of Englishman, with his kindness, his tolerance, his loyalty, his certainties, his prejudices, his pipe, his fishing rod, his horse, his good jokes and his bad jokes, and his unshowy patriotism, that if you had to spend your war up to your knees in clinging mud, you would be very grateful to find next to you. And he is absolutely genuine. I do not know if it is odd that someone so quintessentially English should come from New Zealand, or if that is part of the explanation. But Charlie May was born in that most stonily un-English of towns, Dunedin, on the 27th of July, 1888, the son of an electrical engineer who had emigrated 5 years earlier. His father made his name and the foundation of a successful business with a patent for a new kind of fire alarm device, and on their return to England, Charlie had entered the family firm of May Oatway, acting as company secretary before moving with his new wife, Maud, from the Mays family home overlooking Epping Forest to Manchester, where, just 2 weeks before the outbreak of war in 1914, a daughter, Pauline, was born. It is clear that the Mays did not lose sight of their New Zealand lives. Their Essex home was named Kia Ora, Be Well in Maori, and Charlie would call his new home Purakanui, after a pretty coastal settlement near Dunedin. But in 1914 there would have felt nothing odd about such a double identity. It was famously said that sometime between the landing at Anzac Cove and the end of the Battle of the Somme, the New Zealand nation was born. But in the late summer of 1914, before Gallipoli was ever dreamed of, many of the thousands of New Zealanders who volunteered to fight in a war half a world away would have seen themselves as part of a single imperial family. One corner of the great Dominion quadrilateral of Canada, South Africa, Australia and New Zealand on which the British Empire rested. While still in the south, May had been a member of the King Edward's Horse, a territorial unit of the London Mounted Brigade, with strong Dominion links, and, daughter or not, it was only a matter of time before war put an end to his short married idyll. On the outbreak of hostilities, 5 divisions of a small but highly trained British expeditionary force had immediately been embarked for France to stem the German advance. But Kitchener, for one, never had any illusions this was going to be a short war over by Christmas, and within the month the first 300,000 of a new army had responded to his call for volunteers. By the end of September, another 450,000 had volunteered. In October, a further 137,000, and in the following month, Charlie May enlisted into the 22nd Manchester Pals Battalion, the 7th City Pals, and added his name to the 5 million men who would wear uniform of one sort or another before the war was over. The idea of the Pals Battalions had first been put to the test in Liverpool by Lord Derby, and the city of Manchester enthusiastically followed suit, embracing the patriotic and civic ideal of a battalion made up of friends from the same street, pub, factory, profession, warehouse...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?